nurses, welcome to the Nurse Stop Podcast, where we're giving nurses validation, resources, and hope one episode at a time. I'm Kara Lunsford.
And I am Josel James.
And you're listening to the Nurse Stop Podcast. Welcome to Nurse Stop Podcast.
Welcome to Nurse Stop Podcast. We're your hosts, Josel and Kara, and today's episode is a variety show.
It is a variety show. It's it's anything like spaghetti at the wall.
Anything spaghetti at the wall. Yeah.
Yeah. Like we're just gonna go for it.
We're going for it.
Okay. So we went through. It was actually the ChatGPT that like went through and it told us all of the things that we should be talking about.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. But we landed on a couple. One that we just landed on was actually called nurses, and I'm not going to say the word because I'm not going to call it out by brand.
Ooh,
the yeah. GLPs.
Ooh, the GLPs.
Okay, because there's like so many GLPs out there.
So many.
Tirzepatide. What is it?
You can't say the brand.
That's not a brand. That's generic.
That's generic?
That's okay. Generic.
GLPs.
The GLPs.
I don't even know generic names.
You don't?
Let's look it up.
Okay, he's going to look it up. While he looks it up, I'm going to candidly say that in the beginning, I'm like, you know what? There is not just like a quick answer to, you know, being overweight or, you know, just weight loss.
Oh, yeah.
Challenges. But as I have approached, well, now I'm mid-40s, 46 to be exact, and I've been thrown in, actually. I don't want to say jumped in. I wasn't willing. I did not electively choose perimenopause. It chose me.
Hold on. You didn't choose it?
No. Oh. I mean, I didn't choose it. I guess the day that I came into this body, it chose me eventually. And so here I am, just sitting around, minding my own business, 46 years old. Bam! Hits me. And all of a sudden, I can't remember anything. I have brain fog. I feel really unintelligent most of the time because I can't find words.
When would you say it started?
The cruel trick?
The cruel trick of perimenopause.
Well, I mean, I'm going to say like the cruel trick of just being like a woman started at like 13. That's a cruel trick. And then I thought I was kind of like out of the woods. Once I was in my 30s, I was like, I think I'm okay. Like, I think I'm good. I'm feeling pretty good about myself. I'm like in my career, thriving.
Yeah.
Feeling pretty smart. And then right around like 45, 46, it started to happen.
Yeah.
I was like gaining weight. I was eating the same, working out the same, doing all the same things. But somehow I was just like gaining weight. And I just couldn't seem to lose it no matter what I did. And so actually my wife started, she's postmenopausal. We have a little bit of an age difference. She's postmenopausal. She was also having trouble like losing weight.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know what? Why don't you try the GLPs? And so she did. And she started like losing weight. And she had been really responsible up until that point. She really would go to the gym and work out. She watched what she ate. Nothing made a difference. It was like belly fat. It was like all like, it really was belly fat.
Yeah.
Which now I understand is more like visceral fat versus like subcutaneous fat.
Yeah. The visceral fat around your organs.
Around your organs.
Versus just right under the skin.
Yeah.
Right.
And apparently it causes a lot of inflammation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your inflammatory markers
systemic,
go up.
Right? Yes. Systemic inflammation throughout your whole body.
Yes. So not only was I feeling really stupid, There's no other
I love word how you laugh about it.
Yeah. You have to laugh, because if you don't laugh, you're going to cry. Yeah. And that's the other part. I would feel sad. Sad and stupid.
Yeah.
Or mad and stupid.
Yeah.
It was usually a combination of like a variety of different feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Stupid always being...
Stupid.
Yes, that was a constant.
That was a constant one.
Yeah. But like having pain in my joints... Felt like I couldn't walk. I couldn't do anything. My knees hurt. My ankle hurt. The brain fog was terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Brain fog, like you couldn't, you said you couldn't remember words.
Yeah.
And you couldn't remember things that you know you could normally remember.
Yes.
That sounds frustrating.
It's very frustrating.
And you're in it right now.
I am. I'm in it. Who are you? No, I'm just kidding. How'd you get in here?
Uh-oh, I'm in trouble.
Oops. Yeah, it's really hard. And okay, let me just say, there's like a lot of, our profession is still like 90% women.
Yes.
Okay.
No, you're right. There is a majority of female nurses, 90%, and more likely than not, you're going to approach perimenopause. And the thing is, there's not enough studies on it, right?
No, there's not.
Tons of studies on the male anatomy and what we go through or what we don't go through. But there's not enough, one, studies about perimenopause, and two, interventions and treatments for women experiencing perimenopause. So when you go to the doctor and you say, I'm having brain fog, perimenopause isn't the first thing that they think.
And
they just kind of, what happens?
Yeah, and if you do lab results, it's like a snapshot in time, because women's hormones are always fluctuating all the time. Things are going up and down based on like where you are in your cycle and then where you are in the process of perimenopause, how far into it you are, and like where your estrogen is, and you know where your FSH is, and all of these different hormones that they're like trying to track. And it's really, really difficult with today's medicine and today's healthcare to really be able to dial in to what is happening, right? And so I think a lot of times you go, if you're in your mid 40s or something, and you say, hey, I'm having difficulty concentrating, or I'm having difficulty, it's like, well, maybe you're having depression. Maybe you're having anxiety.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's the first thing.
And fair, maybe yes, but also, am I in this phase of my life?
Mm-hmm.
Because this phase lasts a long time.
Like, how long does it typically last?
Oh, just guess. How long do you think perimenopause lasts?
Just based off the way you talked about, I don't know, 5 years, 5 to 10 years?
Yeah, it's like 8 to 10 years.
8 to 10.
Yeah.
So you're going through these symptoms such as brain fog, systemic inflammation, pain in your joints, increased fat where you don't want fat for 8 to 10 years.
Yeah, mood.
Mood.
Ooh.
Mood lability.
Oh, yeah. Labile. Yes. A lot of people, like women, end up in divorces. They end up leaving their jobs. They end up, like, there's a lot of stuff that happens during these years. And the really sad thing is that it actually is something that can be medicated.
Mm-hmm.
And the more that I'm studying this, the more that I'm learning about perimenopause.
Yeah.
In fact, I was just listening to a podcast, and the woman who was leading the podcast is an OBGYN.
Mm-hmm.
And she was saying that there's all these PubMed articles, right? So PubMed articles, like when you go to PubMed, these are like reliable, you know, sourced information, stuff you can trust, right? So there is 1.2 million PubMed articles about reproduction, pregnancy, reproduction.
Yeah.
Well, it's important because we have to populate the earth, and so therefore there are lots of articles about that.
Yeah.
Then if you go and you look at like menopause, how many articles are about that? Okay. Don't quote me on these numbers exactly, but this is pretty close. Like 90,000.
Yeah.
Okay. So you go from like 1.2 million to 90,000. Okay. Yeah. So that's how little like menopause is studied. Okay. Yeah. Then you go down to perimenopause, which is this long period of time, eight to 10 years that like women are going through in this period of their life. And there's like 6,000 PubMed articles. There's no research being done.
Mm-hmm. For this huge period of time that a lot of women are going through.
Yeah.
And a lot of women, we're all living longer, right?
Yeah.
So you're more likely to reach this stage of perimenopause.
Yeah.
And there's just not enough studies about it in the literature. Therefore, when you go to see the doctor for these symptoms, they're more likely than not, going to address or relate your symptoms to perimenopause.
Yes.
So you'll probably get the wrong treatment.
Yeah. This doctor who was talking on this podcast, she said that when she was in med school, she wasn't taught at all about perimenopause except for how to pronounce it.
Wow.
Like zero.
Yeah.
And granted, you know, she was probably in, you know, in college or in med school based on her age, you know, maybe 30 years prior, but still.
Yeah.
That is just a travesty.
Yeah, I agree.
And so women have been suffering for really long periods of time. There's also apparently, and I don't want to, you know, speak to this per se, because I'm sure that some people will say, no, there is evidence to support this. But according to this OBGYN who was talking about menopause.
Yeah.
She had specifically said that, yes, there are some risks, obviously, to taking estrogen. And there are tumors that are estrogen sensitive tumors like breast cancer and stuff like that.
Okay.
So there was a huge, there used to be, and apparently the FDA just removed the black box warning
for estrogen,
because apparently when you would open up a box or you would get your estrogen, there was like a big paper that said like this drug could kill you.
Wow.
I mean, so I can't imagine that many women were like, oh, let me try that.
Let me hop on estrogen.
But the FDA just removed that black box warning because apparently it was, I don't know how to say this exactly, but it wasn't exactly correct in how they released that information. Yes, can it cause, you know, can it, if you already have like predetermined, you know, factors, or you have a certain type of cancer that is estrogen sensitive, can it be like fuel on a fire kind of thing?
Yeah.
Yes, it can. But does estrogen alone just cause cancer? Mm-hmm. No, not really. So anyway, they're trying to fix a lot of these things, but a lot of women like didn't even get the care they needed because there wasn't proper marketing.
There's just not enough knowledge about it in the medical system. That's what it comes down to too. So you're telling me because what happens in menopause is your estrogen is decreasing. Is that what's happening?
So in perimenopause, yeah. So menopause is really when you don't have any eggs left.
Oh,
right.
Okay.
So when you get to be about 35-ish, you're about down to like 10% of your original egg supply. So like when you're born with every egg that you're going to have.
Wow.
Yeah. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
10% at 35.
At 35. That's why they say after 35, you're kind of like at more like high risk pregnancy kind of thing, because it could be harder for you to get pregnant. You're down to 10% of your original egg supply.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then from that point on, you're just getting lower and lower, less and less and less and less eggs.
Yeah.
Right. So your brain, you know, is creating like, you know, the estrogen. So you have the estrogen that's like stimulating the FSH and the LH, and it's basically telling the ovaries to like kick out an egg.
Yeah.
And the more that the feedback loop is like, nope, there's no egg here. or you know, not now, or there's not enough. It really creates this kind of chaos.
Yeah.
It creates chaos.
Chaos.
And it feels like chaos.
It feels like chaos because the chemicals in your brain, which are the hormones, right, that are getting pumped out in your system or not pumped out because of the number of eggs you might have and your age causing a chemical cascade of all these symptoms in your body. Is that what's happening?
So, yeah. So, and then there's, yeah. So there's all these things that are happening, like when you have less and less and less and less estrogen.
Yeah.
Right. So estrogen is anti-inflammatory. It's totally anti-inflammatory. So like, that's why if you take estrogen, during your perimenopausal stage, you're definitely going to feel better in terms of like brain fog,
mood,
the mood, your achy joints, you know, all of those things are going to feel your ability to concentrate and all of that stuff is going to get exponentially better. The more you lose that estrogen over time, and I have to do a little bit more like of a deep dive on this, but it seems to me that the more you lose the eggs, the number of eggs that diminish,
right,
the more it tells your brain that you don't need estrogen because estrogen is what's triggering the follicle stimulating hormones and the, you know, the LH and the FSH. So it's kind of like as you are getting less and less eggs, the body's like, if you don't need something, it doesn't make it, right? Our bodies are so smart like that. It's kind of like when you take like a steroid, for example. If you're taking a steroid, is your body making steroids?
Probably not.
It stops. So that's what happens when you like suddenly stop taking a steroid.
Yeah.
You go into adrenal crisis.
Yeah.
Right? So that's, I think like that's kind of what's happening with your estrogen. It's like, look, if you don't need it, your body's not going to make it.
Yeah.
Right? Your body's going to be like, well, we don't need to pump any more eggs out.
Yeah.
And there's just so few eggs left. So we really don't need to do much. So it starts to go less and less and less and less because it doesn't, it's only going to put its energy where it needs to.
But that decrease of estrogen will cause the increase of inflammation.
Yes. Increase of inflammation. And what happens if you have inflammation like in your brain?
Brain fog?
Brain fog. And there's nowhere for your brain to inflame to, right?
Yeah,
you've got a skull.
Yeah, that doesn't expand.
Basically, we're all like just getting, you know, concussions. Like basically perimenopause is like 10 years of a concussion.
Man. I'm sorry.
I know. It really stinks.
It sounds terrible.
It's a cruel trick, I'm telling you.
It sounds terrible.
But I am on a mission.
What's the mission?
The mission is to feel better. And be less stupid.
That's a good... Those are two solid things to pursue.
I know. It's true.
What do you wish that more the general public knew about perimenopause?
Well, I would love to make sure that like women felt empowered, especially women who are kind of going through this. And it really does seem to kind of slap you across the face. Like it does seem like it almost comes out of nowhere. Like the hot, you know, the hot flashes sometimes are like more towards like the later stages of perimenopause, like right as you're really approaching like menopause, which is like when the last egg is like fleeing the ovary.
The last egg.
And so that can really be towards like more of like the tail end. But really like helping women to understand that like, A, you're not alone. And like talk about it. I have found that the more I talk about it, especially with women in my age range, the more I don't feel so crazy. I feel like I have a community of women who are like, oh my gosh, girl, I feel that way too.
Yeah.
You know,
and so talking to people who are experiencing the same things you are is important, the community.
I thought that I was like having early onset Alzheimer's. Like,
oh, that's scary.
Really?
That's scary.
No joke. Have you ever drawn the clock? Do you know the thing? You can draw the clock.
Yeah.
And people who have like early onset Alzheimer's and like forms of dementia, you can't draw the clock.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you were...
Yeah, they scoot all the numbers closer together. So like you try to space them apart. And yeah, so it's like if you had a 12 and like a 3 and a 6 and a 9, and then you like fill in and you do like 1, 2, and then 4 or 5 and, you know, 7, 8, the whole thing. And it's all spaced, you know, appropriately. And it looks like a clock. People, when they have like early onset Alzheimer's and, you know, and I don't know how far along that is, but one of the things that they can do is like ask them to draw a clock. And what they'll do is they'll kind of, they won't be able to space the numbers.
It won't be evenly.
No.
Wow.
No, they don't space the numbers correctly. So I did the clock test because I was like, I was pretty sure.
Did you do okay?
I did.
You did okay.
I did. I was fine.
So when did you know it was perimenopause and not Alzheimer's?
I love that that's like the two. When did you know it was perimenopause and you didn't have Alzheimer's? Well, when I started talking about my
symptoms
with other women my age, and I think I was like giving permission to women to like talk about it.
Yeah.
And suddenly we started having the very same types of symptoms. And I was like, oh, thank goodness. There's hope for me. I very quickly lost that hope when I saw how long perimenopause can take. Yeah. So I thought 8 to 10 years, like I'll be divorced by then. Like no one's going to want to live with me. I need to go find an island because I don't even want to live with me.
Yeah.
It was terrible.
It sounds terrible.
Yeah. It's awful. And so then I started doing more research. My wife actually sent me some information, but because she's like postmenopausal, she's like, look, you can survive this. Look at me. I'm, you know, I'm still here.
Yeah.
And I'm feeling good.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, there's hope. There's hope. But I did, you know, start doing a lot of research. And I got an appointment with someone at my health, at my doctor's office, who did perimenopausal screenings.
Oh, okay.
So I actually got an appointment.
You need that. You need a provider who is familiar with perimenopause.
Yes.
Because not everyone is.
No.
Right? Clearly in the literature. And it's not it's not prioritized in our health system, unfortunately.
It's not. Do you have sisters?
I do not.
You have a mother.
I have a mom.
Okay.
Hi, mom.
I'm gonna ask him these questions. Do you ever talk to your mom about like those types of things, like perimenopause? Did you talk to her?
No.
How old is your mom?
In her 50s.
You don't know.
Well, she would say some things and she's like, oh, it's menopause. She would like throw have those lines thrown out.
Okay. Okay.
And I don't know.
Okay, so
we don't really talk about that.
You don't talk about
it. We live in an Asian household. You don't talk about...
Oh, you don't talk about those things.
You don't talk about those things.
Aha. Uh-huh.
You just talk about, did you eat yet?
How's
work? Nice. Good? Good? Nice.
Perfect.
And that's our interaction.
Amazing. And you haven't... And you... Let's see. How old are you?
I'm 35.
Okay, so... And you're not dating older women?
I'm not dating older women.
Okay.
The oldest I've dated was... I was 36. Oh, wait, no, that's impossible. I'm 35 now. I was 29 and she was 36.
Do you have perimenopause?
Have
you forgotten?
Honestly, I'm thinking I do have perimenopause.
Is there some brain fog?
I've been meaning to tell you. Honestly, I can relate to all these. Like, I have that. Brain fog, check. Joint pain, check.
Hey, maybe it's... You never know.
Yeah, I was going to take the clock test next.
You're going to take the clock test?
Just to rule out... Alzheimer's versus perimenopause. Because if it's not Alzheimer's, it has to be...
It has to be the other? There's probably a few other things that it could be, but, you know, why not?
Perimenopause.
So, yeah. So, the things that I would recommend, yes, definitely.
Yeah, tell us.
Yeah, so definitely, like, talking about it, okay? Not being, like, ashamed to talk about it, because you'll find out that you're not alone. Making sure to find a practitioner...
Can I interrupt you there real quick?
Yeah.
Why would people be ashamed to talk about their symptoms? What do you think that's coming from?
I think sometimes women, there's still a stigma around women's age, women and their age.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of times there's still women who don't want to talk about how old they are. They don't want to talk about, this is like a phase of their life, and this means maybe they're less virile.
Viral. Like, I don't know that word. You're always teaching me something new. What is viral?
Like young and youthful and
never heard of that.
Yeah, like able to have children. You know, like it's so feeling old, right?
Yeah.
So I think sometimes even just denial.
Yeah, women don't like that feeling of feeling old. I feel like more so than men.
Yeah, I think there's a big stigma around women getting older. Mm. I mean, you look at Hollywood movies, you look at things like that. It's, you've got these older male actors and they're dating young.
Ah, they are.
You know, the lead in it, or the female lead in it, is maybe 15 years younger or 20 years younger than the male lead. Mm-hmm. So we see a lot of that in society. Mm-hmm. And I think that feeds into
it. It's kind of like an admission of, oh, I am getting old.
Yeah.
And you don't want to face that admission. So you would avoid talking about things that could possibly, because when you start talking perimenopause, that kind of means like you're getting to a certain age.
Yeah.
And so when you start talking about symptoms that could lead to perimenopause, then it's kind of like admitting I'm getting old, and no one wants to admit I'm getting old.
And more women are waiting longer to have babies and to have families. Like there's more professional women out there who went to school, you know, went to college, got advanced degrees, went into the workforce, really succeeded in the workforce. And then suddenly you were like, oh, I really want to have children.
Yeah.
And now the idea that even after 35, that they're down to like maybe 10% of their egg count is,
that's pretty wild.
Yeah. It's kind of scary, right? It's why they 10%. Consider it high risk pregnancy.
35 and overs.
Yeah.
High risk.
Well, yeah, that's what they, I think it's also just more difficult to get pregnant after 35. Not that it can't happen, but, you know.
Statistically,
it's just harder. So, yeah, it's, I think there's a lot of reasons why women don't want to acknowledge that, oh my gosh, is a window closing for me? You know, is this window of opportunity to have a baby, to have family, you know, things
that's
like
huge.
That.
That's huge.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's huge.
I'm running out of time.
It's definitely a conversation now I'm running into around people my age, 30, 35. More people are talking about having kids more. The urgency is more there at people around my age. I'm 35. But obviously...
You sure you're not 36? Because earlier you thought you were 36.
Sorry,
but you were just
it's the perimenopause. No, I'm just saying I definitely see the difference from 5 years ago, right? More people are having kids I don't have kids in my age range than there was 5 years ago. And obviously everyone knows once you hit 35, you're at higher risk. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Hey, nurses. Are you ready to elevate your nursing career? The Wound Care Education Institute can help you reach your goals with expert training in skin and wound management, diabetic wound care, and ostomy management. WCEI offers the largest selection of wound care learning options, designed to enhance your skills, build your confidence, and prepare you for board certification exams. With flexible formats, on-demand, live online, or on-site, you can choose what fits your schedule. Thousands of nurses have trusted WCEI to take their careers to the next level. Now it's your turn. Save $100 on new certification courses with code SAVE100 at checkout. Visit WCEI.net to explore course options and start your journey today. Offer valid on new purchases only, excludes recertifications and refresher courses.
So, yes, I think that's the reason why people generally don't talk about it. There's probably other reasons.
Yeah.
Could be cultural reasons as well. Reasons, you know, sometimes there's things you just don't talk about.
Yeah.
So then I feel like, okay, once you talk about it and you do feel like you're not, maybe not so alone, then I feel like we can start asking, our friends and we can ask our communities, like, well, what are you doing? What are you doing that's helping? What, you know,
yeah.
Have you tried a supplement? Have you tried this or that? Like, I legit started taking a supplement.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually going to wait for your reaction to this, because most of the time when I tell people this, they're like, you did what? Okay. So I got this supplement.
Okay.
Because I was on Instagram and I think the algorithm now understands that I have perimenopause because of all the stuff I'm watching and listening to.
Yeah.
So I bought this supplement that is literally beef organs, capsulized beef organs. But wait, there's more. On it, it says beef ovary, beef fallopian tube, beef uterus, all in a minty flavored capsule. Okay, so I think they had to make it minty flavored because it, like, they're like, I don't know what it smells or tastes like if you don't make it in a mint capsule. I'm really not sure.
Is this one pill?
You're supposed to take two a day.
Okay. So what makes you take this?
Well, there's like a lot of evidence to support that we used to eat these types of things, and like women's diets have really changed over the years, and we get into these fad diets and we get into salads only and we get into like weird things to lose weight. And I think especially during perimenopause, people get like, because they're gaining weight.
Mm-hmm.
We started this all with the GLPs and we will get back to this, I promise. But
I forgot that's where we started.
No, that's okay. It's like we told you, spaghetti at the wall. Okay.
Spaghetti at the wall.
Okay. But it is women's health. Okay. So we're kind of diving into
women's
health.
We're diving deep dive.
Yeah. So I think that we used to eat things, if you look like tribally at like how we used to live, very like anthropologically, okay? You go back to like the beginning of time, okay?
Sure.
We probably ate a lot more of the animal than we do today.
Yeah.
For
like, sure.
Women also probably didn't live as long. Maybe they didn't live long enough to see perimenopause.
Oh, for sure. That too. 100%.
Or because maybe they got killed off.
We're living longer. Like,
maybe they're like, this one's gone feral. Like,
but this was new. We're not living past like 35 to 40 in the 1700s was old.
Yeah, that was old.
Right.
I mean, there's a good chance that maybe like for a very long time, they didn't make it that long.
Yeah. So okay? This is new within the last 100 years, I would say. Us living
at least like 100 to 200 years.
Yeah. Us living this long.
200 years.
With the quality of life.
Yeah.
That we are living.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and who knows what they were doing. Well, actually, you spoke a little bit about this earlier before we got on the mic about what they used to do for women when they were going through perimenopause, menopause. Like you were talking about how like, You were watching a podcast.
It was probably the same OBGYN.
It might have been.
Those stats that you said, the 1.6 million,
1.2 million, and then 90,000.
She said the same stats.
Okay, so
stats.
This is probably her. Okay.
But anyways, yeah, they were saying that in the 1950s when people presented to the doctors with those perimenopausal symptoms, which is labile moods or brain fog, then they would prescribe something with phenobarbital in it. And the advertisements would be, get your mom back.
Oh my gosh.
It's terrible, huh?
That is so terrible.
Because
you're like, we gave your mom a frontal lobotomy, and now she's back.
Because
electric shock therapy.
The way you're talking about it is like, you know, late 30s into your 40s, you're going through all these hormonal changes / behavior changes because of that. And so you appear different from the people on the outside. And then at 1950s, they didn't know any better. And so they'd give you a sedative.
And if you think about it, like, where does, like, when you think about hysterectomy or hysterical, right? Where the words hysterical comes from.
Is because of the mood changes, right?
Yeah, they tied a lot of it to, like, so sometimes I think they, and don't quote me on this, but I think that there was, like, we'll just take it all out. If we do the hysterectomy and we take everything out, like we're going to fix this problem.
Well, that's why they call it hysteria, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, man. hysterectomy, hysteria.
Oh, that's why they call it hysterectomy, yeah.
That's where the word hysteria comes from.
Yeah.
Because people would come in for the symptom. Yes.
Yeah, that's why they would relate it. To call a woman hysterical, I think, is actually pretty, like, insulting. Hey, you're hysterical. Like, that's actually kind of
really
insulting.
I have not heard that insult.
I think it is. I think it's probably kind of insulting. Especially if she's hormonal at the time and you say, hey, don't get hysterical.
I was raised by women, so I know better than to ever even call anyone that. Like,
yeah.
This also reminds me of, oh, hold on, the brain fog's coming back.
Oh,
this,
no.
This remind me of?
Maybe it went with your hair. maybe
this was a big one.
Your idea left with your hair.
I forgot.
It's in one
It was
the
a good one.
Oh, no.
It was a good one. It was a good topic.
Welcome. See, this is empathy.
Empathy.
You know what you're feeling? Empathy. Empathy for what I'm going through.
Empathy.
Maybe you're just an empathetic person.
I am empathetic. That's what they told me.
Yeah. So I think that's what it is. Like, maybe you're just having, like, empathetic perimenopause.
It was a good topic.
Forgot. Was it another piece of spaghetti at the wall?
No, it was along the same lines. Woman's health.
Okay, so you talked about the phenobarb.
Phenobarbital.
I have to look that up, man. I need more information about
that.
You
need to watch that podcast that I want to.
What was it called again?
Diary of a CEO. Can we say that? Will we bleep that up?
No.
Diary of a CEO.
Yeah.
It took five women's health experts leading and then put them together.
I love that you watched all 2 hours of that.
I did. I for sure did. I even took notes.
You did?
I took notes. Maybe I helped.
What did you take? So why were you taking notes? Were you just like, I'm going to need this someday?
All right. So my girlfriend at the time was really into it. She's like, it would mean a lot to me.
Oh, if you watch this. This makes sense now.
Yeah.
I was like, you just like, instead of a Netflix binge, you were like, let me watch 2 hours about women's health.
But
I'm like, there's a deeper story here.
Yeah, but I'm glad I did, because there's so much that I didn't know and that is important, especially in how women's health is treated.
Yes. Yeah. You're going to be a better nurse.
Yeah.
For like knowing this.
Knowing that. Yeah.
Amazing.
I hope so.
Were you going to look up
my notes? Well, I forgot what I titled the notes.
Oh, brain fog.
Brace.
Yeah, I understand.
Diary.
Who are you?
No, where am I?
Where am I? This is a very important topic. And because there's so many women in this profession, I really, really think that this is something that we have to talk about. I'm glad that I'm talking about it with you.
Yeah.
Because I think it's nice to have like a male counterpart.
Yeah.
You know, because you can ask questions and that you just don't know. You just don't know the answer to.
Yeah. Especially the experience of it. Right. Like that sounds what you're talking to me when you start perimenopause, the experience of having brain fog. Right. That sounds so scary. Like, I know we're laughing about it a little bit, but it's just like, I can't even imagine going through that.
It's really hard, because sometimes I'm it's frustrating. It's mm-hmm. super frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
I'm someone who has always felt very confident, like being able to speak up in a meeting or when we go to some of like the executive offsites and stuff like that. Like mm-hmm. I've always really felt very confident about, you know, contributing in mm-hmm. those situations. Now, if I'm in a meeting, if they're like questions at the end, I'm like, oh no, I'm not going to remember. Like, I'm over here. Like, by the time I've picked up the pen, I forgot what I was going to ask.
Yeah.
So I think everyone at my work now knows that, like, I'm like, I'm so sorry. I'm going to ask a question really quick because it's relevant to what you're saying. And I am not going to remember in a second. So I'm just going to raise my hand and ask.
Yeah.
But it is very, very frustrating. And sometimes I'll be in the middle of asking the question and the word I'm looking for is gone. I feel like I'm miming my way like through and saying, I'm sorry. You know, it sounds like two syllables.
Yeah. That sounds scary.
Yeah. No, it's really, really terrible. So it ends up I feel like it's affecting who I am as a person. Mm-hmm. And I have this like moment where I'm like, where did I go?
Mm-hmm.
Where is the Kara that mm-hmm. I have known mm-hmm. my whole life?
Yeah.
I am entering a new phase. I have to get used to a new me. Mm-hmm. Even my therapist, which also I recommend getting a therapist if you don't have one.
I have two.
Yeah. If you don't have one, I wholly recommend. Because my therapist was like, look, embracing this new phase of your life, mm-hmm. understanding that this is about self-care. If you were not good at self-care before.
Yeah.
This is a moment when you, it's like, shit or get off the pot, right? Like, you have to. Mm-hmm. You have to be
you
better
about
yourself.
You have to take care of
yourself. You have to. And this does not allow you mm-hmm. to not take care of yourself.
Yeah.
You really, you can't get away with it. Yeah. Otherwise, you're going to be miserable for like 10 years.
Yeah.
And so will everyone around you.
Yeah.
So it's like, it really forces you into a place of self-care.
Yeah. That's important.
It is. It is. It's so important. Oh, did you find your notes?
I found my notes.
Good job.
Look here. Look at the last one. We were talking about it.
More people will go through menopause than get pregnant.
So it was because of that statistic. That's what I wrote here. More people will go through menopause than get pregnant. But there's only like...
Well, because everyone is going to go through menopause.
Or like, perimenopause.
Or perimenopause. But because you're not... Unless you don't survive until that point.
Yeah.
Like unless you... Unfortunately, like this woman said, the doctor that we were talking about,
yeah.
she said, if you're lucky enough to live long enough to go through this, right?
Yeah.
Because some people are not lucky enough to live long enough yeah. to actually go through it. But if you are, everyone's going to go through it.
But it's just, there's just a disparity, right? A million to thousands.
Yeah.
Even though statistically, right? Assuming you live long enough to get yeah. there, you will, more people will get to that age and go yeah. through perimenopause.
Then we'll get pregnant.
Then get pregnant.
Yeah.
That was mind-blowing to me.
Yeah. But yet there's 1.2 million PubMed articles.
Yeah. And like, and they were also talking about the just the difference of how we care for women and men. Mm-hmm. And like chest pain, like alone, right? Chest pain for MI, for symptoms of MI.
Yep.
But if a woman comes in with symptoms from MI, they call it atypical.
Oh, interesting.
You've heard that before, right?
No, I actually haven't.
So atypical... Like, you would get worked up for an MI if you're a woman for other symptoms besides just chest pain or arm pain. And then you wow. would ask them, like, why are you testing this woman for MI? And they're like, oh, she has atypical chest pain. And that's the textbook definition, atypical. And that didn't even clock to me as just someone who is a nurse
yeah.
that we're calling the symptoms of a woman atypical, which just means men's symptoms is
are typical.
So yeah. I was like,
wow,
that's like the patriarchy in full effect there. Like you don't even think about it.
Yeah. Isn't that wild?
It's wild to me. So that's why I like obviously hearing about women's health, because I think it's important because of the biases that we already have before you even step foot in a hospital.
Yes.
And then once you, the biases that exist in a hospital and the medical system.
Yeah. What was the it was like a late night show, and the woman said they put the word men in menopause so men would pay attention. I'm like that's pretty funny. But you know, it's really interesting because they've put all this money
mm-hmm.
into, you know, ED meds.
Yeah.
You know,
yes.
and making sure that like men can have, you know, proper functioning
yeah.
of their sexual organs.
Yeah.
And then they realized, oh, but my wife still doesn't want to have sex with me.
Yeah.
So we better fix that.
Yeah.
Because that problem's happening for like 8 to 10 years.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter that this pill is fixing my problem.
Yeah.
My other problem is that, like, my wife doesn't actually want to be intimate with me.
Yeah. The libido goes down.
So now we have to pay attention to women's health,
we have
right?
to. Oh, because of that? Just because of that?
Oh, I gotcha.
I get what you're saying.
But you see what I'm saying? Yeah, it's like, well, now it's finally a priority.
Because it has to deal with the man and his needs.
Yeah. I mean, we don't know that that's necessarily true. But like, but
I can see if that was true.
But though. I mean, there's enough evidence to support that we have prioritized men's health.
Oh, and for sure.
Statistically speaking, this is not just like a bias, that statistically speaking, we have prioritized men's health ahead of like women's health. Yeah. And
that's why we're having conversations like these, right?
Yeah.
Because if people don't talk about it, then the awareness is not there.
Right. Exactly. So it is. It's like, it's something that is really important to me. I'm really glad that I'm able to sit here and have this conversation with you.
Yeah.
You're whoever you date in the future, you're welcome. I'm just saying, like, she's gonna be like, why do you know so much about this? And be like, well,
my friends,
there's actually this podcast. If you'd like to listen to it, there's evidence that you took an interest. Yeah. I want to know before we wrap up this this fantastic episode and, what else was on your list?
My list? I have a lot.
Your notes.
I have a lot.
Let's just like, I want you to read it off.
Atypical is the first one. I just talked about that one. Scared of doctor response.
Oh.
We talked about that.
Yeah.
We talked about that women will not go to the doctors with those symptoms.
Yeah.
Because they're scared of what they'll hear.
Yeah. And sometimes, I think they're afraid like, either they're going to be told that they have a mental health problem or that they have some sort of cognitive decline or, hey, you're old or you're possibly going into like, 100%.
And then if you're scared of the doctor response, you probably won't get treatment. And if you don't get treatment, your symptoms could get worse, even if it's not perimenopause.
Yeah.
Right?
And you're just going to like feel miserable. Mm-hmm. It's
I wrote regular period versus irregular period.
And so it starts to change
when just the downstream effects of periods being important, the menstrual cycle being important, but women in their teens for a variety of symptoms, not even related to your period, sometimes not, they'll get put on birth control. And when you get put on birth control, that messes up your hormones in a different way. You won't have your periods, but having your periods is actually very healthy.
Yeah. There is like a health to the uterus and things like that. Yeah. I mean, I think as a woman, it's very important that I think we have access to contraception and because, you know, having, that's just like a personal opinion that we have access, to that type of thing. But I also think that women, even at a very young age, should be very well aware of what they're doing and what they're choosing and how that could affect them later in life. The more information we start to get over time, because as we start to study women, we're going to start to see more latent, issues or things that come up that we just weren't studying before.
Right.
So now I think as that information becomes available, we really need to start making sure we're sharing it with our youth and our young girls.
Yeah, absolutely. Just the knowledge out there. Cause I didn't know. And a lot of just anecdotally, a lot of, women, when I was in my early 20s or when I was a teenager, they're talking about being on birth control, not even for contraception.
Yeah.
Because for whatever reason, acne, regular periods. And, that podcast was just saying it's very healthy to have periods.
Yeah. There's definitely a health associated with like having periods like of your uterus, like,
and it could affect you downstream towards your perimenopausal age when you're not getting enough estrogen or there's an imbalance of estrogen, and because you didn't build the muscle early on in your life, you're probably going to have less bone density. And that's why there's osteoporosis.
Yes, there's another problem when you have like less estrogen.
Yeah, more likely in women. And that tails back all the way from early 20s.
Yeah.
When women are most likely on contraceptives for birth control. And it's just a downstream effect that you don't really think about.
That's so interesting.
Until, because that lasts, 30 years? Depends on the people.
Yeah.
But that's something I didn't even think about. Sugars. I don't know why I wrote sugars.
Oh, insulin resistance.
Insulin resistance.
Oh, that's big.
That's why.
Yeah,
that's
insulin resistance. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. But that's where that visceral fat and stuff comes in. Where we talked about the visceral fat earlier. Yes.
We're talking about that.
Yep.
sugars, diet, diet and exercise, mm-hmm. obviously, that there will be a certain point where we all are going to start, both men and women, we're all going to start losing muscle. And it's very yes. important to put on as much muscle yep. as we can early in life.
Yep.
Especially, you know,
and,
women
and do
who
like resistance training. And stuff like that. Like, yeah, really trying your best, because a lot of times, like, you know, men have the benefit of testosterone, which really helps you build muscle.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was asking my nurse practitioner today, actually at my appointment today, well, what do you think about pellets? And we kind of like talked about the pros and cons of doing pellets. You know what pellets are? So there's like hormone pellets that you can like put like subcutaneously. They actually like insert them into your fat. Mm. And it's like a slow release of different types. It could be like estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, like, you know, it's like this like slow release. And it can last for like 3 months, you know, can I think it can last for like 3 to 6 months. It's like, it can last a long time. And, but the problem is that like, once they're in, they're in, you know, you have to wait for it to wear off. So if it's not the right dosing for you, or it's too much testosterone, you know, too much testosterone is also the same as PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome. Mm-hmm. That is like too much testosterone, right? Like, so you don't want to have like all of those same symptoms that you would get with PCOS,
right?
Because you end up with like too much testosterone. Like, you might get like rageful. Yeah. You get like, there's a lot of other things that could happen.
What do they call that? Oh, roid rage?
Yeah, right. So, you know, having too much testosterone is not necessarily, especially for women, it's not a good idea. But in small amounts. So there's creams. Mm-hmm. There's other types of things you can use
to
like
get
creams and patches.
Mm-hmm. I've
and
heard
so
of the
it's like, yeah, so it's absorbed through your skin. And but that does help you build muscle.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of times women will kind of have a little bit of testosterone cream or something like that that will help them to build muscle.
And that muscle directly impacts you later. We're talking about staying older, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or living longer.
Yeah.
And what do we see? I saw a lot in the ER, falls.
Mm-hmm.
Falls, people break bones because they don't have enough muscle.
Yeah,
right?
They're
because
not protecting bones, their, yeah. And they're both, yeah, they've got the osteoporosis. Yeah. They've got the, you know,
falls
all the stuff,
are so, they're deadly now.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They're not even deadly from the fall itself.
No.
It's the consequences after the fall.
Yeah, you can have a PE. You can have like a pulmonary embolism, like after a hip fracture.
Yeah.
Like you can have like all those things.
Or you're just bedbound. Mm-hmm. And then if you're, you know, a little bit older, and then you go into fall and you can't walk anymore.
Sedentary.
And where are you going to go?
Yeah.
A nursing home.
Yeah.
What happens in the nursing? And,
yeah.
You know,
isolation,
we all know. Yeah, we all know this.
Like all
nursing
the things,
homes,
right?
Terrible place.
It can go downhill really fast.
Yes, and it starts from how we take care of ourselves.
Yeah.
Earlier in life.
Yeah.
And we don't really get. I mean, we kind of get taught this, but we don't really make those connections, I feel like.
Yeah.
So I think it's important to have these talks for sure.
Yeah. So, you know, takeaways here. Talk about it. Find a really good practitioner who knows about perimenopause and actually talks about it, like, you know, on their website,
or,
you know, there's places that you can go, to get more information about it. Even if you Google and say like, I need to know more about perimenopause, there's a bunch of stuff that will pop up.
Yeah. Educate yourself.
And really just know that like self care, this is your opportunity to like put your own oxygen mask on.
Yeah, for sure.
And everyone else will benefit, including you, most importantly you, if you take that time.
Yeah. And self-care involves educating yourself.
Yeah.
Eating right.
Yeah.
Lifting weights so you can build that muscle so we can avoid getting a hip fracture later in life and end up in a nursing home.
Yeah.
Right? That's just
and making sure you're getting the supplements that, you know, they're going to do like the right lab draws for you. They're going to check your ferritin levels. They're going to check a lot of things. And so much of what you need can be supplemented. You can have a better quality of life, but you do have to like take an interest and you do have to show up for yourself.
Show up for yourself 100%.
Yeah. Cause it's not just a simple pill. And yes, I think that GLPs, to bring it back around.
I forgot it.
I do think that GLPs, look at me. I'm the one with the brain fog and I'm like, I know where we started. Let me tell you where we started. I brought it back.
Okay.
But I do think that GLPs are showing a lot of promise, mm-hmm. especially for women who are struggling with insulin resistance. And there's a lot of evidence to support that it really is improving, you know, cardiac health. There's a lot of things that it's helping with. So it's not for everybody, but, mm-hmm. you know, talking to your doctor and saying like, is this right for me? I definitely think is the right course of action.
Good place to start too.
Yeah.
Nice.
Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you, Kara. This has been great. Thank you.
Look at us.
Nurse.fam.
What?
Do I have a community name? Is it Nurse.fam? Nurse Squad?
Nurse Peeps. Yeah.
There's not an official
name. We don't really have an official name, but we'll...
If you want the official name, let us know in the comments.
That's right.
For what we want to be called, Nurse.team, Nurse.fam.
And if you're feeling me on this conversation right now, if you're like, oh gosh, I'm so glad someone's talking about this. I mean, there's a lot of people talking about this, but I'm glad that Kara and Josel are talking about this. Definitely drop us a comment.
Let us know.
Yeah, we'd love to know. All right. Peace out, y'all.
Peace out.
If you're a nurse or nursing student that enjoyed this episode, visit us at nurse.com/community, where you can find the Nurse. Discussion group, a place where we dissect each episode in detail and delve deeper into today's topics. Nurse Dot is a Nurse.com original podcast series. Production, music, and sound editing by Dawn Lunsford. Production coordination by Rhea Wade. Additional editing by John Wells. Thank you to all the listeners for tuning in to the Nurse Dot podcast. Until next time, keep spreading the love and the care.